science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Yes, welcome back. And hello, Alan.
Hello,
How's
Alan.
How's it going?
It's going a bit coolly, I guess.
It's going a bit coolly? Yes, yeah, it has been a bit chilly this morning.
At least we're not in Dunners, I guess.
Yeah, so where's... Oh, yeah.
It's cold down there.
I don't even want to imagine what it's like in those horrible student flats down there.
Snow to sea level,
yeah,
apparently.
So to start out with, there are potentially toxic nanoparticles in baby formula.
Okay,
no?
Well, no? There's potentially toxic nanoparticles everywhere. But, yeah. Okay, so there was a recent study at the State University of Arizona, or Arizona State University, and they were analyzing infant formula, and they found in two lots of infant formula very, very small crystals, or nanoparticles, if you will, of a thing called calcium hydroxyapatite.
Ooh.
And this got the Friends of the Earth a bit hot under the collar because the study was funded, I believe, by them. And they said, right, these nanoparticles are potentially bad and we should ban them, and everyone should be very wary of these nasty things.
Yeah.
So, what are nanoparticles? Question one. So nanoparticles, as the name possibly suggests, are very, very, very small particles. So nano in scientific terms means 10 to the power of minus 9.
Right.
Which is 0.00000001.
Yeah, I think that was 9.
A meter. So a nanometer is, 10 to the minus 9 of a meter. And so obviously really, really, really tiny scale. And they've been a very hot topic of research in science for the past maybe 10 to 20 years, because what people have found is that matter on the very, very, very small scale can behave quite differently to the large scale version of the same thing.
Right.
For example, things like gold nanoparticles, so just very, very, very finely divided gold, does some quite weird things that sort of bulk gold doesn't do. And obviously with any new technology, and this is a new technology, they're looking at using nanoparticles, for example, as drug delivery agents. So these aforementioned gold nanoparticles, you can coat these with a drug, and then you can potentially localize them at a point in the body where you want them to go, and they can go and release the drug, and the drug does its business, et cetera, et cetera.
A replacement for a pill, kind of.
And so a lot of work's been going on in them, and as I said, with any new technology come possibly attendant risks, or possible risks. And one of these possible risks is the very, very tiny size of these things. So people think that because they're really, really small, that maybe they can get into parts of the body that they shouldn't be getting into. They could be potentially toxic, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So they found nanoparticles in these infant formulae, and so there was a debate over whether these things were actually added to the infant formula or whether they occurred naturally.
Right.
And so the manufacturers of these things are saying, no, of course we didn't add these to the formula. And my take on it is that they've probably occurred naturally. Because what you do to make milk powder is basically you're dehydrating milk.
Yeah.
You've got calcium in milk, you've got phosphate anions, you've got hydroxide anions, all of those three hook up to make calcium hydroxyapatite, normally in a different type of form, but potentially when you're taking the liquid water off of these things, you're dehydrating them, then there's no reason why these things can't occur naturally as well. And they, as I understand it, present in very, very, very tiny amounts. As soon as they get into the body, they're just going to dissolve anyway.
Yeah, so in stomach acid and things
indeed.
Like that.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So as soon as they get into any sort of acidic environment, then they're going to be gone. So I think sort of the Food Safety Authority were pretty unconcerned about the whole thing and saying it's a bit of a storm in the teacup and a bit of alarmist stuff. So I guess, I don't know, the jury might still be out on it, but I don't really think it's anything to worry about. I think they're just essentially naturally occurring very, very small particles.
Yeah.
And we come into contact with those sort of every day, naturally occurring things in very, very finely divided form. So
yeah. I guess I think one of the main concerns was that it was it similar to asbestos in the way it's shaped?
Yes, indeed. But the difference with asbestos is that that's not soluble.
Mm, yeah.
Okay. Now, asbestos, yes, very, very nasty, gets into the lungs and you're a goner. basically. But and they made a big thing about the fact that these had sharp edges and stuff. But,
yeah.
But you know, when they're dissolving, that doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter.
Any difference. Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I also remember reading that was it that they the study that they're using, they injected mice with, it was like eight times the amount that you'd actually get, or something even more significant than that.
So this was I think an intravenous injection, I think as well. So so very far away from sort of an
completely
oral
completely different.
Yeah,
completely
there we go. See, different. You understand it. I understand it. Yeah. You know,
so. Why does no one else?
If you were like reading about a study like, about a study like that, and say you're a parent and you see a headline like that, and you're really, you know, it's quite scary.
Yes.
What things do you look for in a story about a scientific study to know whether to take it seriously or not?
That's a really, really good question. I wish I had the straight off answer to that. See, this was carried out at a reputable university. So Arizona State, so it's, you know, it's a decent American university. I think the one thing that might perhaps set alarm bells ringing is that it was funded by Friends of the Earth. So, you know, if you're something like this, you can't have sort of interest groups or special interest groups providing the funding for something that they basically want to find out, you know. I think it's got to be totally independent. It's like sort of, you know, cigarette companies funding research into nicotine addiction or something like that.
Yeah.
It's not without bias. I'm not saying that, but it's not without potential bias, I guess. So, you know, look at who's doing the research. You know, is it a credible organization, and look at definitely who's funding the research, because I think that's the most important thing.
Mm, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. So moving on to our second story. Mm-hmm. So the Grand Canyon has been sued by creationists.
Which makes sense, because the only people who would think of suing a rock would be creationists.
Ooh, that's good. Burn.
Please explain, Alan. Please explain.
I wish I could. Okay. This one's got a little bit of a back history, and it's kind of interesting. So the guy that is behind this is a man by the name of Dr. Andrew Snelling.
Right.
And he is an Australian, and he has a bona fide PhD in geology from the University of Sydney.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes, oh, indeed. Wow. Yes, I know, actually, I know.
This reminds me, I had a biology teacher who would only cover evolution as strictly as possible to the adhered curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask questions surrounding anything else, he'd be like, I don't believe in evolution. How does someone get into that position?
Good question.
Yeah.
But people do, I guess. So this guy has done, again, seemingly bona fide research in sort of Australian geology. And then since, about 2007 or something, he's been on the board of a thing called AnswersInGenesis.com.
A credible source, I imagine.
Which the website name basically says it all. So what he is a young Earth creationist. So he reckons that the Earth is somewhere between 6 and 10,000 years old, and that everything can be explained by the Bible, and that all of the geology, all of the current geology of the planet came about as a result of the Great Flood.
Mm.
Okay. And that lasted for about a year and everything, and then all the mountains started rising and blah, 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 blah. So he wants to get into the Grand Canyon and get some rock samples from the Grand Canyon to further his quote-unquote, and I'm doing the air commas here, people, research into this age of the Grand Canyon / age of the Earth. And so initially he was refused by the powers that be. I think they were, I did have it written down there, the Grand Canyon National Park and the U.S. Department of the Interior. So he was refused permission to take rock samples from by these guys. And so he went and bought legal action against them. And sadly, as you do, they sort of caved because...
Really? So he won?
He won.
Oh.
So really, really... Well, this is Trump's America now.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
So,
true.
So basically they relented, and now they have allowed him to take rock samples from the Grand Canyon. Now, I guess the point that's been made is that access to the Grand Canyon, I mean, the Grand Canyon is obviously an amazing geological site, and so you don't really want to disturb it too much if you can possibly get away with that. And so access or scientific access is limited to a very, very small number of highly qualified people, scientists. And he was arguing that he was basically being refused on the basis of his faith, that he wasn't allowed to take the things, whereas he being refused on the basis that him taking samples is not going to advance science one jot, one iota. But sadly, that's now what is going to happen, so that his pseudoscience is now going to gain possibly some credibility on the basis that now he's going to take these rock samples and he's going to subject them to whatever research he does. And come out with yet more papers in so-called peer-reviewed creation journals. They really are peer-reviewed because they would only go to fellow creationists. Yes, so that's the absolute definition of peer review, I guess.
This is all harking back to a few weeks ago where we had a discussion surrounding not fraudulent, but not to be believed peer review documentation.
Yes, and indeed.
You've got to look into who's actually peer reviewing said articles.
Yes, yeah, of course you do. Yes, So that, it's very, very sad, unfortunately. It's a very sad thing, but, you know, this is the post-truth era, seemingly, so anything can happen.
Reality is weirder than fiction. And speaking of creationism still, apparently a new law in Florida will mean that residents can challenge anything that is taught in a science class. Please explain.
I know.
This just sounds like a sad, sad thing.
So not unrelated to the previous story, but so you're right. So there's a law just been passed in Florida basically saying that anybody, any resident of the Sunshine State can object to anything that's being taught in any public school in the state, and they don't have to have a kid. They don't even have to have a kid at the school.
Really?
So I
were living in Florida, and I didn't like geology because I hate rocks. Rocks are horrible things.
Yep.
I could just waltz in there and be like, do not teach these children about geodes.
Yep. And apparently the school boards have got to employ some sort of supposedly neutral person who then has to organise an investigation into all of this. And if it's found that geology's bad, then they tell the school to remove it from the curriculum.
So this is basically allowing a forum for nut jobs to give their own opinion in an education system. Which sounds like the most inherently flawed thing.
You're not wrong. Yes. Yeah. It is hard to believe, but it's happening. And there's one possible bright side to all of this. We normally think, as you say, nut jobs, couldn't put it better myself, coming in and saying, I don't like this, I don't like that, get rid of it. And obviously it's going to be creationism and climate change, obviously the two things. But, you know, you could look at it on the other hand, and hopefully there's a few committed individuals from the other side of the fence who will go and say, right, let's get these Bibles out of schools and everything. It's, you know, separation of church and state.
There's a silver lining to it, isn't there?
A potential one. Potential. But sadly, it's the nut jobs that seem to have the time on their hands to be able to do this stuff, dare I say it, the sensible people are out there sort of, you know, advancing the world and just sort of looking past all of this stuff. But it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this all works out.
Has this been like a trend around the states? Have we seen similar things occur elsewhere?
Well, I would have thought Florida would have been a little bit more sensible than that, but I guess they did go Trump last election, didn't they? You'd sort of be thinking, you know, your Kansases and your Missouris and, you know, places out sort of, out in the Great Plains and stuff.
Good old Bible Belt.
Let's hope this isn't a trend. Let's hope it's not the start of a countrywide thing.
Yes.
Because it's not good.
It's almost like ignorance is cool now.
I don't know if I'd go as far as saying maybe more acceptable. It's a more acceptable thing. Because, you know, as you were saying, just for post-truth reality.
Ignorance is cool. I like that. Get the t-shirt, mate. That's good. and spell it K-O-O-L.
Well, thank you very much for joining us again this week, Alan.
Thank you, Adam. And I hear that this is your last wire.
It is my last wire.
Yes, goodness.
Oh, I know. I didn't actually announce it before, but now it's been taken out into the airwaves.
It's been a pleasure working with you.
Yes, you too, Alan. Yeah. I hope I'll see you around anyway.
Yeah, good luck in your new venture.
Cheers. See you later.
See ya.
That was Dear Science.